The Bible is for me.
Well, hello everybody and welcome back. I want to start off with a couple of things here. Before we get into the podcast today, I want to say the first thing that the book is released. The book is out into the world, Curiosities and Uncommon Sense from the Bible. It is out. And I just want to say a huge, tremendous thank you. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you so much to everybody who like bought the book and posted about it or reached out to me and told me you bought it. I have a pastor friend of mine who told me like this week that he bought like 30 copies for his whole team as Christmas presents. I just want to pause right here and say thank you so much. You guys are so supportive. And the whole release has been so fun. Thank you, guys. Thank you. I've now said it 12 times in the opening paragraph, but I mean it. You guys are the best. So I want to start by saying that as we start the podcast today. I also want to say today we are doing another Christian movie review. And I just want to throw in a little note here that as we roll into 2022, I have some podcasts lined up. I have some guests lined up where we're going to be talking about the funniest parts of the Bible and what we can learn from them. So we are going to be doing more of those in 2022. You guys have been so kind and so excited about the Christian movie reviews. It's been really fun to do. And we're going to do another one today. So that's what we're going to do. And I'm excited about it because I am joined by my best friend and someone that you have all come to know and love. And his name is Tim Wyckoff. Tim?
That's me.
How are you today, Tim?
Ho, ho, ho. I'm feeling great. Yeah, I'm feeling just like a dime a dozen. That's not good. I feeling warm and cheerful, and yeah. I feel like ain't no political correctness gonna get me down.
That's a good mood to be in for this movie. Before we get into the movie we're gonna cover today, Tim, I gotta ask you, what's your favorite Christmas movie?
It's gotta be Christmas Vacation. That's an easy, really, I think it's easy.
It absolutely does have to be. I want to make this, for the sake of podcast, I want to make this more interesting and be like, Jingle All the Way with Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Yeah.
But it's Christmas Vacation. It's
that would make
so...
me hang up right now.
I want to review, I just rewatched that this season. It was on.
You did?
I did. It was on. I watched every year.
What is wrong with you?
There's parts of that movie that make me laugh out loud when Arnold Schwarzenegger says, he's in my house. He's eating my cookies.
That makes you laugh.
It kills me every time.
Man.
But it's not. It's Christmas Vacation, man. You could quote that movie like start to finish. You could just pick a line out of that movie at any scene, and you're going to make me laugh. That movie's fantastic. But that's not the movie we are reviewing today, Tim.
No, not. I wasn't fortunate enough to get to watch that movie yet as my first holiday movie this season. Thank you, Anthony, for bringing me into this podcast and this series that I love.
As many of you know, Tim never watched any Christian movies until this series. And today, we continue it. We are going to review a Christian Christmas movie. Although, in the planning of this podcast, Tim and I talked and decided that every Christmas movie is a Christian movie.
Right, right. Just like when your Christian radio station will play Mariah Carey and go like, no, it's cool because she's singing about Christmas. It's fine.
My point,
Christmas is our holiday, so it's cool. You're like, yeah, but you would never play a Mariah Carey song any other time. You just...
Right.
Then she's not even singing like a Jesus Christian song. She's singing All I Want for Christmas Is You. Unless you take that to mean...
All I Want for Christmas is Jesus, Tim. Thanks so much. That was my point to Tim, was what he was just touching on. I said, hey, if we're going to do this at Halloween, and we're going to say anyone who practices anything on Halloween, you go trick-or-treating, it's a Satanist. It's a Satanist holiday, so yeah. All practices are Satan. I was saying, then the opposite's got to be true for Christmas. It's a Christian holiday, so everything you do in and around Christmas time and Christmas, it's all right. Christian, guys. I'm sorry. I don't make the rules.
That's it. You're in, whether you believe in that stuff or not.
You see,
sorry, if you wear red or green in the month of December,
you're doing now Christian things and
Christian activities.
You are at a work Christmas party and you see and your coworker opens up a present that you like and you steal it. That's a Christian activity now.
It's what Jesus would do. Yeah, would Jesus play that game?
I don't have time. I feel like Jesus does, and Jesus steals the worst gift. That's what Jesus does during Dirty Santa.
Ugh, that'd be the worst. Like, that's not fun. That's not fun. Come on, Jesus. But
that's the kind of guy he is. That's the kind of guy Jesus is. It's exactly what he would do. He would go home with the worst. Everyone would be like,
that's not true.
That's not a good gift.
That's not the Jesus I know. He would be fun to hang out with. And that'd be the one time he'd be like, gotcha. That's the Jesus I know.
Give me that Starbucks gift card.
Sucker.
So the Christian Christmas movie. This is a Christian Christmas movie we're reviewing today is called Christmas. With a capital C.
That's right. Because all those people that are spelling it with a lowercase c, those pagans.
We're going to get into it here, but I like to say this at the beginning. It, podcast listener, I don't know how many full-length feature films you have made. I have made none up to this point in my life. Tim, have you made a full-length feature film yet?
Six of them.
Tim's made six. It's very so Tim knows from experience. It's a hard thing to do. It's a long process, and I've always found it important. If we're going to have some fun with this work that they've done, then I will start by saying, tip of the hat to you. It's a tough thing to do. You got to write a script. You got to shoot it. You got to edit it. There's so many things that go into making a full length feature film. Impressive accomplishment, no matter how it turns out. So shouts out to them and to everyone who's ever made a full-length feature film. And hopefully Tim and I will join your ranks at some point. But we haven't yet. So I tip my cap to you, and I ask you, Tim, can you tell the people, what is Christmas with a capital C about?
Well, I can tell you what PureFlix tells you it's about. The synopsis on that platform says, a lawyer returns to a small town and attacks a traditional nativity display. But the townspeople learn that love can triumph over political correctness.
Mm.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
Political correctness is the enemy of love. Love wins.
Oh, that's good. Because
that's who we should be attacking right now, is correctness.
I liked correctness with a capital C. I like to do a little bit of a further synopsis. There's probably a few of you out there that have not seen the film, and we're going to talk about it and different parts of it. We're gonna kind of dive in. So I like to do a little bit more of a rundown just so you get a sense of the story that we're going to be covering today. So I'm going to go into that now. Again, Tim gives you the one sentence. I'm going to unpack it. Dan Reed is our main character. He's the mayor of his hometown, Trapper Falls, Alaska. He lives there with his wife, his two children, and his probably adopted brother, Greg.
I think Greg had some issues.
I don't want to go too far into it right now, but he is 2 feet shorter than his brother and looks entirely different. And if we're just supposed to not talk about that, I guess that's fine. Dan's high school rival and big shot attorney, Mitch Bright, shows back up in town and immediately starts making waves by suggesting the town's nativity scene be removed from City Hall, announcing his candidacy for mayor, and having the audacity to drive a U-Haul truck down the road.
Big city folk.
How dare you? The town seems enamored with Mitch, and it seems the writing's on the wall when Dan's personal assistant and the town's only legal representation alerts him that the judge will probably rule to move the nativity scene. Dan's wife, Nancy, helps him rediscover the true meaning of Christmas as they move past fighting over the nativity scene and begin a series of townwide service projects called Christmas with a capital C to distinguish from all the other ways of spelling Christmas. I apologize that you're going to hear five versions of that joke, but
synopsis is better than mine. I like it.
A particularly kind action by Dan's daughter seems to really impact Mitch, who's going through personal problems of his own. He ceases his crusade to have the nativity scene removed and becomes the third member of the Reed brothers that he always wanted to be.
Mm. Amen. Let's pray.
And it would actually continue the theme of none of the Reed brothers look anything alike. So that's fine.
Which is also funny because Mitch Bright is played by Daniel Baldwin, who looks like every other Baldwin. I honestly don't know. I had to look up how many Baldwin brothers there are because I'm like, I swear, I think there's seven of them, and they all act. There's only four, but they all at different times they are in their lives. They are different shapes and sizes and addicted to different things, I think, and so they all look a little bit different, but also not that different.
Right, maybe that was intentional. Maybe he looked so much like the other Baldwin brothers. He was like, if I have anything to do with this movie, none of the brothers will look anything alike. But here's what we like to do. To get into the film, I like to ask some questions. And so, Tim, I make you watch these movies, and you are a great friend for doing it and then doing the podcast with me. My first question for you today is, tell me a few of the best parts of Christmas with a capital C.
Early on, well, there's like good parts that are actually like, I don't know if I want to jump to it yet, but like, I was surprised by this film. Like, I went into it thinking like, oh my goodness, this is just going to be some sort of propaganda film about how people like don't want to say Christmas. And it is to some degree. Like, Brad Stein has his place in this film where he gets to preach that message. However, the overarching theme is like what wins in the story is something totally different, and I was really thrown off by it, and I loved it. So that would be like one of my actual favorite things. But goodness gracious, there were just some fun moments. Early on, the mom Kristen is the best character in the whole story. Shouldn't have
not
jumped
even
there.
Close.
I know, she's so good. She looks at her son at dinner, who's like moping around at dinner, and she goes, "Hey, Cody, what's wrong with you?" And he goes, "All the girls are reading these vampire books. I just don't get it." And he doesn't have a retainer, but that's how he talks on that line. "They're just reading these vampire books. I just don't get it." Like.
It's exactly like you are thinking like, oh, they're kind of like taking a creative liberty. That is the dialogue.
That's
if you
the
were
line.
To write out what is said, he's looking and you, if you've seen movies enough, you're like, oh, it's a girl problem. Like there's some girl he likes that doesn't like him back or something. It's some very personal,
right.
But he seems to be struggling with just the existential idea that girls his age are reading vampire books.
Yeah. That's it. That's the problem. That's what's getting his goat.
That's the issue. And not for nothing, he does not look like a character that would be out of place necessarily. He's a young, fresh-faced. It's not like he's saying this because he's got some huge full beard and he looks like a lumberjack and he's like, I don't get it. They're into the vampire types. It doesn't make any sense. He just comes out of the clear blue sky and says, I have an issue. That was such a funny part. I'm so glad you called that out.
What was your favorite?
Well, let's stop here for just a minute. Let's stop here because the title of this question is best parts, and I just want to echo your echo about what you said about the whole film in general. I mean, I was walking in going like, oh, this is kind of you just think what it's going to be.
Yeah, watch the preview. Watch the trailer.
Even your synopsis, that like the one liner that they're kind of selling the movie with, and you're like, okay, and we knew what we were getting into, and then you get this like, there's a real heart to this story. Like when you say the best parts, like the main character goes through an arc and actually is changed
in
at the end.
A Christian film, what a thought!
I want to applaud it. That's the whole point of the segment is we go through these, and this is what I want to see. I want to be pleasantly surprised. And listener, I'm telling you, I was pleasantly surprised by the entire narrative of this movie.
Right. Now, I don't know if I've just hit a point where I've watched too many of these terrible, terrible films that you've made me watch. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that one, it got me because you watched the trailer. And again, this is all predicated on big spoiler alert because we're just going to tell you what happens.
Yeah, we told him the whole thing.
Yeah. But you get to this point where you're like, you watch this trailer, you think this is like sort of this propaganda piece against political correctness, and it is to some degree, again. Mm-hmm, but then you hit a point where it's revealed through the most intelligent characters in the story, which is not uncommon, that it's his wife. And then the priest, this like Catholic priest who's in some sort of town council or some other council, meaning I don't understand what sort of council they're in. But those two people sort of drive the actual story and go like, hey, maybe you people are too worried about like this, you know, saying the name Christmas and not like actually being good Christians, like doing things that Christ would want you to do, like loving people and caring for people and like serving people. Duh. And it's great. And so then you're brought into this thought that, yeah, maybe that's how the film's really going to end, and that's really going to be the final story. And then in reality, you get to the end, and it's this it's based on the song "Christmas with a Capital C," that and shows the Brad Stein clip of him going off in 1991.
Oh boy!
In some sort of comedy club about not being able to say the word Christian or Christmas and. It kind of goes off the rails there. But like, if you pay attention to the real meat of the story, like some real producer or storyteller got a hold of this thing and said, no, I can actually make this a good story.
Sure. Yeah. Like, here's the thing is like, it's why don't we... Yeah. And the conclusion, I'm going to say maybe one of my best parts would be the conclusion at the end. So they just start practicing their Christianity. They start like caring for people in their community. They start doing all these things. And I mentioned the synopsis. Dan's daughter makes this little cookie package. They find out all these things. They just basically are kind enough to Mitch that Mitch sort of starts to open up about some things. And then at the end, both sides, nobody's changed their like thoughts greatly. Sidebar, which I think is important. Too many Christian movies, like that's the only thing we can build to is somebody sort of flipping teams.
Right. Gotta have a conversion. Otherwise, what's the point?
Why did we do all of it? But in this one, the end of it, they're working. Dan makes Mitch in charge of the Chamber of Commerce of the town and sort of says, like, let's work together to make our town better. And it was like, I was blown away. I was so blown away. I was like, this is a, there's a heart to this story. There's movement to this story. So for best parts, yeah, I'm going to say like, the main character arc, the whole narrative, the whole kind of like thing they were getting out of like, hey, maybe you guys are even getting lost on this. That was what I would say the arc is. Dan's wife and others are kind of calling him out. At one point, his kid drops a great line because his kid is practicing for the Christmas Cup. And someone's like, oh, is your dad helping you? And he goes, I don't know. My dad's probably more worried about them calling it the Holiday Cup. And I was like, that's great. That's exactly like, yes, it was an intentional dig and it worked and it was like, well said. I was great. I want to start. I love that you started there. I just want to state that I was impressed by all of that. Now, for my funny moment, I want to call out here in this particular segment. Earlier in the film, Dan and Mitch are high school rivals and they're still not on good terms yet. And Mitch is working out of the diner and Dan goes to confront him and he goes to sit next to Mitch and he turns the chair around.
AC Slater style.
I wrote in my notes, AC Slater style. And he sits and I thought, if there isn't a more power move in the book than, oh, you thought I was going to sit in this chair the traditional way?
Nope. Oh, you thought I was going to sit on the ground crisscross applesauce?
Guess what? I'm going to sit in a very uncomfortable way. I'm going to have zero back support. Okay.
My funny moment, since you brought up like funny moments, because you said favorite moment versus funny moment.
best part, then we do like cheesiest part next. So, you know, go off. Whatever you were going to say, say it.
No, funniest moment to me, you mentioned a little bit the daughter, Michaela, bringing cookies to Mitch. Like, that's her act. She has this like act of kindness, which there's a backstory here, because she gets up to sing on the town square. I have to go back. We have to like tell the story. Like, the story is predicated on this like legal action that Mitch comes to town and says, hey, the town shouldn't be spending public dollars on religious things, which is like kind of true. Depends on, it's going to offend somebody, but like, yeah, you got to be careful how like public dollars are spent. That's a real thing. And he says, yeah, you shouldn't be spending extra public dollars on these events and things and figures and whatever that can be celebrated privately but shouldn't be like part of the government. It shouldn't be like pushed and paid for by the government.
Because Dan and the team are building a new platform.
They're revamping scene. The nativity scene and painting So they build this platform to make the nativity scene. They sort of get shut down halfway through. Well, then the daughter, Michaela, at one point gets up in her angel costume and starts singing this cute little sweet song. And at one point, Mitch like tries to pull her down off pulls her off the platform. And this is when you find out like Mitch is actually like a terrible guy. I mean, you knew he was bad. He wasn't like the good guy. But he's like pulling this child down off the platform while she's singing Christmas carols in an angel costume. And also he's like struggling with it too. Like he can't quite like get a good grip on her. Like she's like a greased up watermelon or something. And he's like, I get down off of here. Yeah. And then he gets in a fight with Greg over it all.
Yeah. I had that down. I'll use this as a segue, because I had that down as my cheesiest part, probably. The whole buildup of that. I also, unintentionally, I had to actually correct myself. I was convinced Greg was drunk in that scene. The way he was sort of slumped over and like sitting there off to the side weirdly, as his niece was singing, I went, oh, he's drunk.
That's how many of your nieces have you hung out with like that much?
I was like, he's
it's a small town.
That was immediately my thought, and then it wasn't until three scenes later. I was like, oh no, that I'm sure that wasn't the scene. But it was dark, right? She's not like lit on this thing. It was a very strange sequence, and it was just kind of reiterating and making him more of a villain. But I also thought it was, I thought this movie did so many good things, and one of them was like the silliness. I thought it correctly shined a light on the silliness. Like at one point Dan is like, well, I can build a platform here at City Hall and do whatever I want with it. Maybe it wasn't for the nativity scene. And then at one point, Greg in this scene is arguing like, she's just dressed up like an angel. That's not even necessarily a Christian thing. Like, you guys are ridiculous. You know everybody sounds ridiculous, right? And like you said, then you get these great characters like Kristen coming in and like saying like, hey, what if we actually did like productive things this time? What if we did that? Which was fantastic.
Well, and that led to like, to Michaela, the daughter, bringing, like, doing the productive thing, doing the kind thing. Like, she's Cindy Lou Who.
Right.
And she's going to the Grinch. It's literally that same story. And she goes to the Grinch and she delivers, like, she wants to bring a box of cookies to him that she made. Well, he's not home, and she, like, knocks on the door and looks in the window like a creep and doesn't see anything and like gets out, like goes back to the front door and leaves a box of cookies on the front doorstep. And my thought initially was, they're in Alaska, there are bears everywhere. If this girl is trying to kill Mitch, she's set him up. She's evil.
I will say, You just were in Alaska recently. I've never been to Alaska. I was in Montana though recently.
It's like the same
though. And they are I don't want to say the world revolves around bears, but like most things you do, there's a step of bear safety, and this movie featured a criminally small amount of bear safety.
None.
To be set in Alaska.
No, the kids are running around jumping out of the cars, like no big deal. Like there's not a bear lurking around the other side of the trash can. Unrealistic.
Okay, a couple other cheesy parts I wanted to call out. At the end of the movie, the whole town shows up at Mitch's house, which is sort of poorly furnished, and they're like taking care of him, and it turns into this, you know, classic Christmas movie, the end of the Christmas movie. But Mitch picks up a child at one point that we had not seen prior
to
in the whole movie.
Who is this kid?
I was like, who's that kid?
No, that's wrong. I thought I missed that kid. I'm so glad you pointed that out. Like, was that like a cousin of his or something? Like,
we've not been introduced to anybody related to him. We've got no reason to believe he has a kid. And at the end of the movie, like Tiny Tim kind of, he picks the kid up and you're like, who dat? I don't know.
Where'd she come from? Is that his niece?
I don't know who this is.
Does he have a niece? Like Greg has a niece that he should be hanging out with?
Couple other things. Dan at the end, a lot of the movie is built around Michaela is very pumped about being the angel in the performance.
Oh my gosh, this is the best.
This is like a key thing, right? We keep talking about it. She's practicing her lines.
She's nervous about doing it. She's got to be in front of a bunch of people. It's a big play. Like she's worn this costume all over the place. She's practiced with her uncle.
She has. Yeah, she can't. She's just so hyped on this thing. And I'm talking early, you know, like your act one, this is brought up that she got the angel in the play. She's going to speak. It's a big deal.
Unbelievably important to her. This is like a life changing moment for her.
She's also, last bit of context I'm going to give you, performing in a room that looks like it seats 30. I think that's worth noting. In the middle.
Town.
But I'm just going to say, then in the middle of her performance, her dad gets up and leaves.
Has an epiphany, stands up, looks her in the eye, and she goes like, yeah, Dad, I get it.
I mean, if you're going to do
it's not that good.
Am I supposed to?
Her song was going to end in 45 seconds. Like, Dan, let your daughter finish the song.
And what he goes to Mitch. Like, his whole thing is he's going, where was Mitch going to go? He would have been there.
Mitch was in his home with no power on, with the fireplace going, and he's bundled up. Like, we find out Mitch actually doesn't have money.
Right.
But Mitch, he knew that. Mitch wasn't going anywhere. He was trying to fall asleep on his couch in front of a fire on Christmas Eve. And he walks out in the middle of his daughter's performance.
In the
middle. Couldn't wait 30 seconds.
Of the show. She's mid-speaking, and he gets up and walks out. My last thing for cheesy parts, and again, this may be shots fired to somebody out there. The Dan's son, his little story arc, he is cross-country skiing. I'm just going to say I don't know that there's a least athletic-looking activity than cross-country skiing. So every time there's a couple times they try to build it up, like he's going real fast and he's racing somebody, and it's like, have you seen someone cross-country ski?
Not looks fast.
Like, looks like somebody walking on ice with tennis shoes, kind of. Right. Like, I don't know, I could fall at any moment. I'm like running, but I'm not moving very quickly at all.
Right, it's like watching someone try to run through like thigh-high water at the beach. Yes. You're the fastest. Okay, but I could... I don't know. I went slower than that.
It's exactly... That's a great analogy, because swimming, you look so smooth and you can look so fast. And, you know, snowboarding downhill can be very cool. Even skiing downhill when you're kind of like going back and forth, that can look cool. Cross-country skiing, there's no...
And the way they try to film it, the way they try to tell that story, they've got the boy and the girl, he's like close-up shots on their face. They're not, it's so fake, so honestly poorly done, but I don't know how you do it better because it's so boring anyway. How do you show them going fast when there's no way they're going fast?
They're not. The cross-country skiing was a hurdle for me. Again, I'm a Florida kid, so maybe there's somebody out there. You can feel free to message at The Bible Is Funny on Instagram. Let me know if cross-country skiing changed your life and how you met your significant other.
You can change your life with cross-country skiing. I'm just still not impressed by it.
It wasn't great. Okay, let's go through some characters. We touched on some of this. Oh, we usually do. That's fine. Your favorite character, and you can throw in a couple if you need to. Tim.
Man, I like Josie, the coffee shop girl. 100%. I liked her.
100%.
Peppering her in there was great. Like, she kind of threw everybody off and became, she was like the crush of the crazy brother, like the lunatic brother who was actually, it was played by Brad Stein, but I think he was just Brad Stein.
Josie was fantastic. She I have her in wonderful. This category too. And the line, I even narrowed it down to a line because Mitch comes in, and again, he's the big shot person, it's a classic Christmas movie motif, but he comes in and he's like, hey, what if we got a like cruise to stop here and drop their people that are on the cruise off here and blah, blah. And they're in a town hall meeting and Josie looks at everybody and goes, Mitch Bright has some good ideas. I thought, you're right. Like, Josie's right. He does have some good ideas. Like,
well, and then you feel for her too. Like, she has the moment where Greg, Brad Stein, goes off on her because she runs this coffee shop and she's trying to get some more people at the coffee shop.
Right.
Again, Mitch has tried to give her some ideas for getting some more people in there. Like, he's trying to help her economics, which it's kind of a... Anyway, that's something that we're all interested in.
Of course.
And he's trying to help her. And so, anyway, she is just kind of following the lead of like what she thinks she's supposed to do to include people and whatever, and tells Greg, Brad Stein, happy holidays. And he loses his mind. He goes absolutely berserk in this lunatic rant in the coffee shop and is like, I don't want to say happy holiday. Why don't you say Christmas? You should say Christmas. I want you to say Christmas because I want to say Christmas. And yeah, I put that tone on there because he sounded like my five-year-old. This like argument of like, no, I want to say Christmas on Christmas. Well, you do, but it's, you want to say Christmas when it's December 1st. Like, it's not, you're not my wife in her birthday where it's, your birthday takes up the whole month. It's technically, it's not really Christmas. Maybe I'll give you Christmas week, but like, it's not. If you're upset about saying Merry, like somebody not wanting you to say Merry Christmas on like December 7th, then like, hey, honestly, you need to check your calendar. Like, you're not that close. We're 2.5 weeks off, bud.
Right.
But he goes on this rant like he's just a whining five-year-old who goes, I don't want to. And you're like, okay, well, here's kind of the logic behind like why you should do that. And he goes, I don't want to. I don't wanna.
Right.
And that is my daughter. When I'm like, hey, can you put on this dress for school? Like, that's your uniform. You've got to wear it. I don't want to. Okay, I guess don't do that then.
Like, right. Yeah, let's just go into this now. Usually we do your least favorite character next. I think for both of us, you're probably already getting the hint. Our least favorite character, and stop me if I'm out of wrong. I think we, Tim, jump in if I'm way off. I think we both disliked Greg the most.
Michaela. Oh.
Greg, played by Brad Stein, was just, and I'll start with my like, I had a lot of levels of problems with the character. You mentioned the love interest with Josie. It's one scene. Oh. We never come back to it.
And it's one-sided. Oh, for sure.
It's definitely one-sided.
She wants nothing to do with him. And I can't blame her because he stands on top of her chairs in her coffee shop and causes a huge scene over very little.
So you have this. He struggles to ask Josie out. And then we never get back to him and Josie. Like, we never touch on that relationship again. Secondly,
well, he tried to fix it later on. He tried to come back and like apologize for standing on a chair
when he cleans
and, like,
the stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
But like the romantic, they were clearly started a romantic arc and then abandoned it.
Yeah.
Secondly, you have him in there in this coffee shop and he can't barely speak to Josie. He's so nervous. And I'm putting nervous in quotes because that was like what they told us is
right.
He can't even ask her out and he's trying to ask her out. The next scene of him in that coffee shop is him on a table yelling at everybody about how angry he is that people are now saying happy holidays.
He's so passionate. If you're passionate about something, I am not ashamed. The gospel of Christ.
Maybe that takes me back to why Josie's not interested. Like, oh, you're this passionate about this, but for me, you're so not interested. You can't even. So it just was. The whole character was a mess. Like, yeah. you want to do the layers of this. The character. I didn't really see his part in the story was hard. I don't know exactly what he's doing.
He reminded me a bit of like Cousin Eddie. If we're going to go back to Christmas Vacation, he's got a little bit of like something's fried in the brain there, because you get to the end of the film too, and he goes, Mitch comes back and he comes back together, has this really awkward triple handshake he was trying to shake Dan's hand, and then oddly Greg jumps in and throws his hand on top like they're in a team huddle. And he goes, so Mitch comes in and he says, like, whatever, like to help you guys, whatever. They sort of reconcile. And Greg drops the line. He's like, something about like, if you're going to come in here and like tell us not to put this up here, I'm just going to say, brother, I'm not ashamed of Jesus. Never going to be. And it was like, no, like this whole argument isn't about whether you're ashamed of Jesus. Like that, it has nothing to do. Like, you should be passionate about what you believe in.
Sure.
This is all great. He's like not arguing any of that. And his point is, just don't use government dollars to pay for what you're passionate about. And that's it.
Right.
But the brother who's like got like a screw loose is going, hey, just so you know, I'm not ashamed of Jesus.
Yeah. Right.
We got it, Greg.
Oh, it was so interesting. I really genuinely want a behind the scenes, because it was like definitely the way the movie turned out was like the adults were talking, which is like kind of what you're describing, Mitch and Dan and Dan's and Kristen and some of the other characters involved. The adults were talking, and then Greg was always around, and it was clearly meant to be funny. I think a lot of the parts that were supposed to be funny fell real, real flat. Like they just, almost like if Cousin Eddie becomes so iconic in Christmas Vacation. It's like, but if Cousin Eddie just missed, if like every line, if like Jar Jar Binks were the Cousin Eddie, like nobody liked this character. It just didn't work. It just didn't work with where everything else was headed. And I think maybe like accidentally or like in a backwards way, they got to like, hey, so you have this Dan character who throughout the story, again, I can't praise enough, like seems to be in the same place as Greg in the beginning, and then seems to hear from the town council, from his wife, and yes, even from Mitch Bright himself, that there's some credence to this discussion, and ends up in a more like in a different place at the end. And he still believes in Jesus as much as he did in the beginning, but he learned and grew throughout the movie. And then you had Greg, who also dropped Brad Stein's 2010 like line, "Put a helmet on," which was like one of his specials, which felt like so cringy when they forced it in the dialogue. It just the whole.
Do you think they forced it in, or do you think Brad was like, "Hey, I'm not doing this movie unless I get my line in"?
Probably. He really was. And then this was personal. There's a point where he's like practicing the play with Michaela, and he ends up doing this like real strange Robin Williams genie in Aladdin routine with Michaela, where he's like sort of telling the Christmas story. But again, just like it just felt like, man, there's a sweet movie here. There's an interesting story. There's some points to be made. And then also there was Greg.
Well, Greg has his, like, gosh, I felt like there was so much, like, there was some good amount of, like, bigotry there, too. Like, there's this weird sense of, like, calling people out for stuff. Like, and I'm like, I'm surprised they kept it in the film, period. Like, when Greg's character, like, sees Mitch back at the dinner table, and Mitch is criticizing the Dan for being a mayor and having, like, pretty conservative political like responses or leanings towards stuff.
Yeah, right.
And Brad, sorry, Greg, responds and is like, oh, so you're like the people's man, like you're the man's man because you learned at Berkeley in San Francisco. Because, oh yeah, when I think of a real man, I think of San Francisco. And I was like, holy crap, that's a really uncomfortable dig that you're trying to do. Like, I get it. This film was made in 2011, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And so maybe we weren't as woke as we are now, but like, what are you doing, bud?
Dude, yeah.
What are you trying to call out? Are you tougher? Are you tougher than somebody who's from San Francisco?
Well,
sorry, Brad. Sorry, man.
And it was even, again, because I want to put praise where it's due. The story was good, and there's so much of this story that holds up.
Right.
But then you say, you live in a town, they acknowledge the town has 4,000 people in it,
mm-hmm.
and you're going to, like, mock someone from a real city in, like, with a ton of people in it. And it just didn't fit. Like, none of it fit. It felt like there were two... The Dan and Mitch characters were coming from relatable places, and then there was just Greg.
Then there was the brother who was deprived of oxygen for a couple of minutes, and we don't know what happened and when, what caused.
He ended up a lot shorter. It was wild. I'm glad we went there because now I want to land here. We're talking about our favorite characters. We both talked about Josie. We've talked already about Kristen. And I want to just spotlight another highlight quote from her.
Oh, okay.
Can I shout out?
I've got one more character I want to mention too, but yeah, do Christian.
I have
Kristen.
A couple too, but I want to spotlight Kristen. Earlier in the film, she's talking to Dan and he says something. Oh, she says, like, can you set the table? And he says, I have people who do that for me. And, she goes, what happened at work today? And he goes, what do you mean? She says, you only joke about your lack of actual power when you've had a run-in at work. And I was like, this character, this actress, all of this is fantastic. Right. I'm already in.
If that doesn't sound like your wife, I don't know.
The cutting through the bullcrap of this woman already. You only joke about your lack of actual, acknowledging you have no actual power. But we only ever joke about it when you're in a bad mood. Was fantastic. She was great. Voice of Reason, liked her a lot. Who else you got for favorite character?
Well, it's a favorite character / favorite, like, weird storyline. When the two brothers go on this hunt to say, hey, we feel like something's up with Mitch. Let's go track down some of his history and let's go talk to his old bosses and his old people that he worked with. And so they go and they, like, fly their plane because they are adventure captains. They have a plane, and which, of course, Greg is not allowed to fly or he would kill them all. that's noted. It's not my assumption. That is what is said in the film. So they get to his firm in, I don't know, where do they go? Was it somewhere else in Alaska? The big city, Anchorage? I don't know. So they go and, like, they like...
Fair question.
They... somehow get up to the office that he used to work at saying they're friends of Mitch, and they're in this conference room and this kid comes in, and the kid like couldn't be more than 19 in real life, and I don't know if he's trying to pull off being 25, but he's like meeting with them and he's like, well, Mitch doesn't work here anymore. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he's like, yeah, I'm not supposed to say anything, but Mitch got let go. He made some bad financial decisions. And and it put the company in jeopardy or whatever. And so now he's gone. Evidently, if you lose money, you're no longer an attorney.
Right.
And so Mitch is gone, and the kid's like, it's you. So you guys say you're friends of his? And they kind of like cringe and like, yeah, I guess we have to admit we're friends of his because we already told people we were.
Right.
And the kid goes, okay, well, here, give this to him. And he pulls out of his wallet several thousand dollars in cash.
Sure.
It's crisp, clean $100 bills have been sitting in his wallet awaiting this day. And he's like, Mitch helped me out a long time ago. Like, what did he do? Did he like buy you your first stash of cocaine? Is this... And then you sold it and made, like, why is this so secretive? What's going on? And then come to find out later, this kid, like, Mitch loaned the kid money years prior because he and his wife were having some sort of issue. And he loaned the kid, like, a couple grand. And the kid's been hanging out with that money, I guess, waiting for Mitch's friends to come by and walk in the door so he can pay it back because he carries around thousands of dollars in his wallet.
Yeah, there was some suspicious stuff going on, no question about it there. Because even the story didn't sound like, at one point he says, the kid that works at the attorney's office is like, oh, he put me on some cases when I first started here. That's why I'm so kind to him. No mention of this loan when he was in dire straits and he was lent money, presumably without interest. Also, no interest in paying Mitch back while he had every capacity to pay Mitch back before he got, like, he knew he was in financial trouble.
Right.
Very glad you brought it. It was an interesting note to me. He made a bad investment, so we let him go from the attorney office. Wait a second. What were we? That was a little bit confusing. It was a little bit of a strange adventure we went on. But I also thought, you're bringing up something that I, just an overall thought I had for the movie, that Mitch comes in asking questions about this particular small town government and how it's run. There's a couple other things that come to light, two specifically. One will probably be the topic of the next movie, that there is a small meeting of, like, maybe it's town council, maybe it's somebody, and that Catholic priest is there, like, making big... big decisions for the city. It's like Mitch, his wife, another character we've only seen one time.
No.
And then
the woman who
the priest.
What was her line? I'm going to look it up because I wrote it down.
The godless. We're supposed to do something with the godless people.
Oh no, the woman who in that meeting, Dan first, they're talking about the establishment clause, and that's what they're fighting here, you know, the law. And Dan is like, well, I mean, what should we do? Should we put up a menorah or a Kwanzaa symbol? I don't know, whatever that is. I don't even know what that is. To which I thought, or you're in Alaska, there are many native cultural holidays, I think, that are local that you could talk to. There's indigenous people that you could talk this over with that maybe hadn't been colonized. Anyway, you talk to them. And they're talking about the establishment clause. And this one woman chimes in and just yells out, screw the establishment clause. It's just like, this is an injustice. Like, no. Oh, gosh. No. It's not. Oh, man. If you only knew what injustices actually were.
I think it's the same one that says later, we're supposed to bow down to these God haters, which I thought was another line that I wrote down. It was worth saying.
No. Why don't you guys just pay the $35 in paint that it's going to cost to touch right. up these nativity characters?
To touch up.
And just put them in somebody's lawn close by or a business close by that's close to public. Like, this can't be that hard.
Okay.
According to Greg, 98% of these people, of Americans, only celebrate Christmas in December.
According
they don't celebrate
Greg.
Anything else. 98% of the people. You've got to find one of those businesses near town hall that's willing to put up this wonderful nativity scene in their lawn.
This brings me to another couple of questions that I think were left unanswered and might be critical. One, we talked a lot about this nativity scene. It had been passed down. We heard some of the story, one of the stories. was like a carpenter that made these nativity pieces that have been in the town for 50 years. Family and listeners, these nativity scene figurines were 1,000% plastic. They were the plastic that you put out at your church, maybe, for the nativity scene.
I thought it was just high gloss paint. So,
for me, it was the way they were picked up and sort of chucked everywhere. I was like, there's no way these are made out of wood. Like, if we're supposed to take that those are made out of any kind of wood that's lasted for 50 years, there's no chance. Those are plastic nativity scenes. But the bigger question that we also never addressed was, because you touched on it with the plane, there's one like adventure outfitter service in this whole town, and it's Alaska, folks. Like, this is a big thing up there. People go up there, they want to go see, there's a glacier nearby we found out about, and there is pretty clearly a monopoly in this town
by the mayor.
It's run by the mayor of this, what you might assume would be a fairly lucrative industry. Given its, I'm just saying that I agree with Josie. Mitch Bright has some good ideas. We should probably be asking some of these questions about this town.
What are the chances Dan is actually like the head of a very small, like very small mob?
It's two people big, and it features Dan and Greg.
And Greg, and Dan's like, ugh. Why were you born in my family?
Man, I do have to
spot. Greg did look good. I know we you and I talked privately about this. Greg Bradstein, I thought he looked good. I thought he looked like Joel from Parenthood. Like
I'll give you that.
Feeble, like a feeble looking version of Joel, who's a strapping young man.
Truly kind of a smaller guy. Yeah, I'll give you that. I thought he was looking very healthy. I thought, yeah, I'll give you that.
Thank you.
I thought I was going to tell you one more thing, and I may have lost it. Just two other quick things I want to share with the family. Again, we're talking a lot about this movie. I think we both liked it more than we thought we were going to. There's a scene where where Mitch is filming Greg, and this is just fun nostalgia for everybody because he's the big shot attorney, and he's filming on what was probably a cutting edge cell phone at the time. But he's also doing it with two hands, and it is like it's not an iPhone. It's some sort of like Motorola or Nextel device, and it's just a nostalgic moment for me, you know, because you looked a lot less cool. Nowadays, you're doing it with the iPhone, and it looks like normal. Everybody does it that way. So that was a moment for me. And then my last one, and then I'll be done with this. I'll get our final reviews, was a line between Dan's son and Dan's son's love interest. I'm forgetting her name off the top of my head.
Sienna.
Thank you. It's the end of their big race, and she wins. She wins. Another thing I really liked. I should have put that my best thing that she won that race at the end, the big Christmas Cup. And they had bet a moose burger. And he says, I still got my best time. And she says, you still owe me a moose burger.
That was funny.
I loved it.
Their super awkward dialogue together was just fun. She came in like really like aggressive. I don't know if you picked up on that, like very early, like your first introduction to Sienna was her like kind of attacking him and like going after him, like mean. Like, I don't like this girl.
Definitely made you wonder. I wasn't clear on if she was the best one on their school team, their school cross country team, which is probably like when the school cross country skiing team is walking through the hallways with their Letterman's jackets. Everybody's like,
right in Alaska, that's a thing. That's like football in the South.
Cause it's so much fun to go watch the games.
They compete with the bear hunting teams. Like, oh, this is the old bear hunters. These guys are jerks. You should see them in the locker room.
They set a box of cookies down, and they have to. That's how they trap the bears. Okay, well, we got to wind down here, Tim. This is our final review. This is our system, our very sophisticated system here on Christian Movies Are Funny, which is what we call this segment. We do raised hand emojis. It's a scale of raised hand emojis. goes from 0 to 5. I'm going to say half points are allowed. Tim, what's your raised hand emoji review for Christmas with a capital C?
With a capital C. I think part of it is just it's got to be a feeling from like what I initially thought I was going to get out of this film.
Mm-hmm.
Based on the trailer and based on the terrible, stupid song at the very end that it says it's based on. And then the Brad Stein joke rant at the end, despite all of that, which it says the story is based on, but it seems to very much not be, I'm going to go with 4. I'm going to go with 4 out of 5. And I don't know if this is my highest. I'm afraid to go 5 or 4.5 because I want to see what's out there.
Yeah.
But I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah. I had it at 3.5. I would say a lot of similar things. I could definitely be talked into as high as 4. To me, and for me, it was the conclusion. It was, where did this whole story go to? And it ended with these two people who think differently, who have some different things that they believe about how things should work, and they came together to help their town, and they wanted to help their community get better. And I loved it. I really thought the end, what you want out of a Christmas movie to me is to just sort of feel good about the end. Everybody comes together and it's all nice and fun. It's Christmas vacation. You're dancing in the living room with the police officers and the boss from work.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I got. And that's right. What I got. And I was very happy. So I'm a 3.5. I could definitely go as high as 4.
Yeah. I'm just glad political correctness didn't win this one. Sheesh.
It nearly did. It nearly Sheesh. Did.
Not on my watch.
Like Thanos in Avengers, we're always afraid that one of these days, political correctness is going to win. Well, hey, thank you guys so much for listening. Tim, thanks for watching another Christian movie and for reviewing it with me.
It was my pleasure. I can't wait to do it again. For our next holiday themed one. Sorry. I need to specifically say which holiday it is.
We didn't talk
Otherwise,
about that.
Brad's going to attack me.
We didn't talk about that enough because my thought on that has always been the multiple holidays. I've shared this with you too many times. I'm sorry, guys. Yeah. We travel, we do improv comedy. We're in the car together a lot. So he has to hear it again, but there's multiple holidays. So you say Christmas, there's also New Year's Eve. There's New Year's Day. Maybe there's Thanksgiving in there, depending on how often you see somebody. So you say happy holidays because you say, I don't know when I'm going to see you next.
Yeah.
I've never.
No.
I've don't always.
Do it, you pagan.
Felt like holidays is just efficient language. But we learned from this movie I would say the bigger narrative of this movie is that it has a place. They were taking aim at season's greetings, which I also thought was funny. It's such a now that one is a weird one. I'll give them that. That one is a strange thing to say.
It's a mouthful.
Season's greetings does not work for me. Happy holidays is fine. With me, my book anyway. But anyway, it was fun. Thank you, Tim. I hope you're in the holiday spirit now. The Christmas spirit. Boy, here we go.
Wow,
we're going to be catching
Anthony.
Ourselves doing it a lot.
Oh my
now.
Gosh. I'm actually in the New Year's Eve spirit right now, though, so it works.
Sorry. The Christmas spirit now.
Say
Christmas
it with a capital C, Anthony.
With a capital C. Thank you guys so much for listening. I appreciate everybody that reaches out and says what they're thinking about these, especially the Christian movie reviews. And I really love it when we get suggestions. So send in your suggestions. Let us know what Christian movie you want to cover next. We've got some good suggestions jotted down, but you just keep them coming. We'll keep doing them because I really love to do it, and more so, I love to make Tim do it.
How sadistic are your fans where they're like, oh, let's make them watch this?
I've told you before, but my mom has one she's always talking about, and she's like, Tim's going to hate it.
Thanks, Sue.
That's how she laughs. This has been really fun. Thank you, Tim. Thank you, listeners. Love you guys. Be back with another episode here soon.
Okay, bye.